Session number 1677, Reverend J. Brooker, Reel 2.
Reverend Brooker, Reel 2. We've been talking about route marching. What happened if anyone fell out and couldn't make it, or whatever the distance was?
At that stage, I don't think we had any problems like that. That came later in when we were doing battalion with the battalion and that sort of thing. You'd get the odd one. Well, they had to appear on company orders next morning. Or go sick.
Were your feet checked after the
march? All checked regularly, yes. After every route march.
Who would do this?
The medical officer.
And that was a responsibility which was very fixed.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I think it was the medical officer. It may have been the sergeant beforehand, but he was responsible. He would eventually check.
Did you do bayonet training? Bayonet?
Use of the bayonet? Oh, yes. Right, almost from the first.
What form did that take?
Well, similar to what you see in the films now, they have a target and you go forward and in, turn it to come out, in, out, and then you go on round. Usual thing.
And was this accompanied with the usual encouragement to scream or yell?
Oh, yes, always done. Yeah. Because that's part of it in a bayonet charge, you see.
Did you do any, in your basic training, did you do any trench digging, to learn how to dig trenches?
I can't remember. We carried a trench digging tool. If we didn't then, I know we did when we went to the battalion. You went out on schemes, as we call them, they're manoeuvres, you know, and you dig trenches then, and just as it was in real war time. But whether we did it in their recruit training, I can't remember. I don't think so. We just did the basic recruit training.
Did they tell you, teach you of the regimental history?
Oh, yes.
Esprit de corps?
Oh, yes. Every time they possibly could, they would remind us of the Royal Fusiliers with the Shining Seventh, and that they were the they were formed to guard the Tower of London. Now, who was it? It was the Stuarts, I think it was formed. They're former the Stuarts. I can't remember now, but it was quite a deal.
Did they, sergeants would be quite experienced men, or NCOs, did they talk about the Germans to you in any way, what you might expect? Or was this a bit too early?
Oh, too early for that. I mean, these were people that had been called back, called up, reservists called up, you see. And they were training instructors, so they wouldn't know any. Well, in any case, the war really hadn't started then, because, I mean, in January, I mean, things didn't really start until when it got towards Dunkirk.
Leisure time, when you finished your day, your working day, how did you get through that? What did you do?
Rest. More often than not. Might go down to the local, although I didn't drink or smoke in those days. I didn't drink or smoke until I'd been in the army, but it was after Dunkirk, Lowestoft. Then I used to go down and have me a pint and a cigarette, and started with shandy, of course. But
did you have a canteen in these initial stages?
Not a canteen as such, but I think there was a little sort of, not shop, but somewhere where you could buy things like chocolates or cigarettes and things like that. But if you wanted to, we would go out into town, into Totteridge, which is North London, when we're recruit training, to get a meal or something like that sometimes, if we had the strength.
How much were you paid?
Well, the initial pay was 2 shillings a day, but you saluted once a week for 5 shillings, because the other, where I was concerned, I was married. Oh, no, I wasn't right at the beginning. I wasn't married. I was married during my recruit training, towards the end of it. I think it was 7 shillings, because 7 shillings was kept, or something like that. Something was kept back for breakages and things like that. I can't remember exactly how much. But it was 14 shillings a week, 2 shillings a day. And then when you were married, if you were married, then it went down to 7 shillings a week, because 7 shillings went towards your marriage allowance, which was under a pound, 17 shillings a week, I think, marriage allowance was then. And they kept 2 shillings back for breakages. So I used to salute once a week, 5 shillings.
And they kept that 2 shillings irrespective of whether you'd broken anything or not?
Barrack damages, they used to call it. They went into the battalion funds for barrack damages. Whether you did it or anyone, they did it, kept it, and that was it.
Life in the rooms or barracks that you were living in with these other men, did you take to that okay?
Well, one put up with it, shall we put it that way, because you always had disagreements and all that sort of thing, and you always had people that you didn't get on with and others that you did. I was fortunate. I had a friend there who's like myself, and sort of kept themselves to themselves, and we chummed up. What happened to him, I don't know now.
Any bullying going on?
I don't think so. Not from the NCOs. Certainly not from the NCOs. They were very good. I don't remember any bullying. Because we were all from, whether it was any of the other, it wasn't in our squad anyway. Whether there may have been in the others, I don't know.
You must have found your boys' brigade a great advantage, because you were used to being with adults in groups of this kind anyway.
No, I was used to being with boys.
With boys.
Not to adults.
So the point I'm making is that when you came into the forces and were with a group of men, it was a man's world. Mm-hmm. You found that you could take that, okay, all right, you could adapt to that.
Oh, I think so, yes. But as I say, it's too far back to recall what my feelings were. Of course, I entered into the sport and all that sort of thing, which made it easier.
Was there a lot of emphasis on sport?
Fitness. Mainly fitness. I mean, running and things like that, and gymnastics, you know, exercise. Physical training, as we used to call it. That was part of getting fit. You had to. And it was hard work. Especially when it was in the open as well, and in the middle of winter, of all things.
The Fusiliers didn't have the same pace as the Dermite infantry.
Oh, no. No, they were ordinary infantry. 120 to the joint. 110 on a route march. Oh, I always remember trying to do that. Well, it'll come later, I expect, the infantry base of the Durhams. So I remember trying to do that at Southampton just before D-Day. We did it for a bit of fun on the quay. We never did get up to the right pace.
So at the evening when your working day was done, you say you basically rested. You'd no doubt have duties to perform of were the various jobs that they gave you to do as in addition?
In the evening.
You know, you didn't have potato peeling or...
That was in the morning. Most of the fatigues, as we call it, were in the morning. After breakfast, then you got all the various fatigues, cleaning and barrack cleaning and all the rest of it.
Cleaning your equipment and that, was that a nighttime job?
Yes, that's when you did it, yeah, cleaning at night. Because you have been on parade in the morning at 9 o'clock, inspected in your gear, and if you weren't up to scratch, then you were on a charge. And that was it.
Did you see much of the officers in this initial training period?
Not a lot. We didn't have platoon officers like they do in the normal battalion. We just had a platoon sergeant. We had a company commander.
Do you call who it was?
Oh, yes. Tiger Hodgson. That's what his nickname was, Tiger Hodgson. He got badly beat up in Normandy. I don't know whether he survived, but in fact, he was, strangely enough, he was the second in command of the battalion when I applied for a commission, and it was through him that I got it.
A good officer?
I think so. Very, very sharp. In fact, I was his batman at one stage. I was also his company clerk. Because he was company commander of the same company that I went to when we joined the battalion. So, no, he was a good officer, yes. I think there was another officer, but, you know, he was the only one that you really take note of because he was in charge. He was a good training officer, too.
And you've mentioned that the sergeant and corporals were decent types.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, you didn't get, in those days, religion, discipline was strict, yes, but you didn't get people bullying like they do now. I blame all this that's happening now to what their home life was. All this business in the forces and all this business of crime and everything else is due to parental lack of control. And dare I say it, the do-gooders. It's unusual for a minister to say that, but I do. I do believe this, all this do good. Spare the rod and spoil the child.
It was a basic discipline in life.
In those days, yes. Oh, yes.
How long were you on this basic training period?
1 month. Just 1 month.
Did you get any leave in that month?
I know, but we went on leave at the close of it and then joined the battalion at Harpenden. I did get a weekend leave to get married towards the end of it. I was going to get married on Sunday the 1st of March. Oh, no, 1 minute, it was more than a month because I got married in March. We went in January, it must have been... No, it was 3 months. 2 months, I'm sorry, 2 months. Because... it was towards the end when I got married, and that was in March.
Getting married, did you have to inform the army?
Ask permission. Oh, yes, I had to ask permission. In those days. I don't know whether they do now, but they did in those days.
And permission was given without no problems, no?
Oh, yes. It's wartime, you see. It's different. I mean, it didn't like the regular army. We were conscripts. So it made things a bit easier. Yes, I had to get leave to get married.
Going home for the first time in uniform, your mother seeing you, what was the reception?
I don't remember. Talking about leave now, going home like that. Recruit training, we didn't get away at all. But when we... had time to spare at in the battalion itself. You'd Sundays or something like that, or Saturday. One could slip home if it was in. Well, I lived in London, you see, in those days. Of course, you could slip home for it. At least my parents were. But it was frowned on if you were caught. I was caught once without my gas mask.
In your training period, there would be punishments, obviously.
Oh, yes.
What kind of punishments would they mete out?
Confined to barracks, CB, so much CB, and perhaps extra fatigues. But, of course, you did get, when you got to your battalion, there were, for more serious offences, such as full-pack training, reporting to the sergeant major with full-pack and all that sort of thing, and doing a sort of double time business and that sort of thing in those days. But not a lot of it.
And your pack would be loaded, would be full.
Yeah. Overcoat and all.
It must have been quite arduous.
It would, yeah, trying to do it at double time. Fortunately, I was never in that position, so I don't know for sure.
After a month, then you moved then to the battalion, is it?
2 months. I thought it was a month.
2 months. Which battalion was this?
11th Royal Fusiliers.
Where were they?
At Harpenden.
And was this a proper barrack situation?
No. No, billeted in houses. The only time I was at barracks was at Octu.
So the routine of cleaning and sleeping would be the same, no doubt.
Oh, yes.
What advances were being made now in your training? What were you being asked to do?
Wider experience of company training, battalion training, whereas before it was only more or less squad training. Now it's company and battalion, field training, manoeuvres. We used to call them schemes, of course, but I mean manoeuvres in the field. You'd travel somewhere to some area and do sort of attacking and digging and all that sort of thing.
Was it based on First World War experience?
Mainly, yes, at that stage. Things changed later, of course, when... I'm trying to think when it was Montgomery became our corps commander, before he went to the Middle East, of course. He introduced this new battle drill of the pincer movement, which the Germans used, and he introduced it, and we started using that, where you would, instead of doing a frontal attack like they did in the First World War, your section machine, we'd do it section first, your section machine gunner would be there, and your rifleman would be going around this way. They would be covering you.
And you come around the flanks.
Yeah. Mm. That's the routine that he's done now. It's a pincer movement, as they call it. And that's how we trained afterwards.
And that started, as you say, with the squad, and then through the...
Then with the company, you'd have the same sort of business. And then even battalions. But individually, it based on the section and the platoon. You see, if you were attacking in by platoon, right, you'd have your three machine guns, mortar Bren guns, give them covering fire, and your section's moving around the side.
What other changes did battle training bring to you from what you had been doing?
It was more, what shall I say? Can't think of the word now. It's it concentrated to more to certain movements and things. For example, as I've mentioned before, the battle, the pincer movement, and then there's the forced marches and things like that. One learnt to alternate between trotting and marching. Not trotting, what's the word? Running, you know.
So you do it at a certain distance marching and then you'd run?
Yeah.
Then march, then run?
Yeah.
Mm. What kind of distances might they be when you would...
It'll be timed. It'll be so much. I think probably 10 minutes running, 10 minutes marching. Then 10 minutes running, 10 minutes marching. We reckon to cover 6 miles an hour. The normal margin is 2.5.
And what would you be carrying?
Oh, your normal kit. Normal kit. I can remember going on a scheme on Salisbury Plain for a week when we lived out. And we route marched every day. And some of it would be forced route march, some of it would be just ordinary route march. And we'd have a sort of an attack at the end of it. This was the sort of thing that Montgomery introduced, so that we'd be fully fit. And we would sleep in the open, of course. stand to in the morning, as you do it when you're in action, and then complete some sort of maneuver that we had to do, and then start marching again. I think we covered somewhere in the region of about 150 miles that week. I'm not sure. There was certainly over 100, and we were absolutely shattered when we finished.
And you say that Montgomery introduced these changes to the training when he became your corps commander.
Our corps commander. I can't remember what corps it was then, but we were at New Milton, stationed at New Milton in Hampshire at the time.
What date would this be?
Late 41, perhaps. Yeah, I would think late 41.
Can we go back to joining the battalion? You say that there was an advancement, in effect, upon your training. It widened. What other elements of difference were there between the recruiting and training and the battalion?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, the recruit training was done in squads, whereas your battalion training was done in companies and battalion strength. And you had to fit in. I didn't get involved too much in it, because when I went from recruit committee to the battalion, I remember the sergeant major saying, "Is there anyone there that can type?" Up my hand went, and so I became company quartermaster sergeant's clerk. So there were a lot of things I didn't go on in those days, till I blotted my copybook. That was when we moved to Tenby.
Can we look at your duties and the work that you did as a clerk, quartermaster clerk?
Mm-hmm.
What time did your day start?
Oh, 9 o'clock. Like office hours, in a way.
What did the work entail?
Well, looking after the stores and things like that, company stores, making sure that we had what we wanted, and if we hadn't got it, telling the quartermaster sergeant what we wanted, preparing what's the word for it? Indents, that's the word. Indents for money and things and all that sort of thing, and keeping records, mainly. I'm trying to think what else.
Would those be records for material going out, or stuff going out to the platoons and
coming in? That's it.
So you'd have basically an inventory of everything that was there.
Oh, yes, yes. There were two clerks, a company clerk and a quartermaster clerk. Company clerk was the company commander's clerk, of course. He was mostly dealing with correspondence. I was dealing mostly with materials, various things that required.
Were you well equipped at this stage?
No. In fact, I can remember, even the time of Dunkirk, we only had one Bren gun per company. And there should be three per... One Bren gun platoon. Whereas we should have had three.
That would be one per squad, was it?
Yeah. Squad of eight, if it's full strength. Platoon was about 30. That was the... 3 squads. Sure, it was 3 squads. Used to be 4, but I think it's 3. I can't remember now. Well, we had 3 or 4 squads in the platoon.
It probably was 3, yeah.
It became 3, I know.
Then there would be, 3 or 4 platoons per
company.
And how many companies per battalion?
4. It was four platoons. 4 platoons per company. and four companies. Yes, if it's 30 strong, it would be. Four sevens are 28, and the sergeant and the officer.
Yeah. And you and your job, as you say, was to look after the stores side of this.
Yeah.
Great deal of paperwork, was it?
I wasn't overworked. Not to that great extent. But you see, it was too much for one man to do, with both the company clerk and the doing, so that you had to have one of each.
Who was company quartermaster sergeant at that time?
I couldn't tell him. I can see him. Nice chap. I can see him now.
And you say basically office hours, so you'd finish, what, 4 or 5 o'clock at the end of the day?
Yeah, depending. And then, of course, your evening is the same as anyone else. You had to keep your gear kit clean and all that sort of thing. And any other duties such as your rifle and all that sort. You were kitted out like an ordinary man in a platoon, but you were only there, you were only called on in emergency. That was the situation. You went out on schemes as well at times, but not so much as the fighting men, as you call it.
If you went out on a scheme, did you go out as a member of the fighting element or as the clerk?
As a clerk.
Because again, you'd be issuing materials as of whatever you were at any given time.
And of course, food is another one. Food, I'd forgotten that. Most important. We'd indent for food as well and everything else. And of course, the quartermaster sergeant would have cooks. The cooks would be cooking, but it would come through the quartermaster's office, you see.
Was ammunition also part of his? It's basically everything that had the battalion need or the company needed.
Oh, yes.
Where did the supplies come from when you were indenting for whatever you'd required?
I would imagine most of it from brigade. It would come down through, you see, from army to corps, from corps to division, division to brigade, and we would indent to brigade.
Had you fired a course with your weapons by this stage?
Oh, yes, you do that regularly. On the firing range, you had to keep them. I mean, even we did, clerks as well. You had to take it every so often. Every so often you go to the firing range and let off a few rounds and get your checkers or how good and how bad you were.
What range might you fire at?
Oh, there could be a way, yes. We'd go, you'd go travelling.
The actual firing distance, how many yards vary?
Oh, it would range anything from 100 to 500, 600. You'd adjust your sights on the doings.
Did you get the opportunity to fire the Bren on the range as well?
Yeah.
And the mortar, the twin mortar.
Mm-hmm.
So in effect, everyone in the battalion would have some experience of every weapon.
Oh, yes, yes. Oh, you had to learn that. You learned that right the way through before you ever got yourself into a position like I was. I think we must have done that at our recruit company as well. I'm sure we must have. But it's so long ago, I can't. I'm confused now.
We've got to the battalion, and you've got this job as quartermaster's clerk. When was your next move? Where did you go to next?
The battalion or me?
You personally.
Well, I got myself into trouble, and I was sent back to duty. That was in Tenby. Now, that was when the Orwells were bombed at Pembroke Dock. Now, I can't remember exactly when that was. But it must have been 41, I should think. It was after Dunkirk, anyway. And I was sent back to a rifle platoon. Shortly after that, our signal platoon was asking for volunteers to learn signalling and go into the... And, of course, yours truly volunteered. And of course, eventually I passed the signalling course, got my flag, signalling flags up, and became a regimental signaller.